Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. It's a brand new year and we're back fresh after a couple of weeks on holiday and we're excited for the year ahead. Today we'll hear from Ossian Ward, Head of Content at the Listen Gallery, and Jane Morris, Editor of the Art Newspaper, about a few openings to keep an eye out for in 2016 around Europe. And then we'll head to Singapore to find out what's going on at Chan Hampe Gallery. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review. Stick around. So first up, we're going to hear from Ossian and Jane. First on their checklist of what to see this year is Electronic Superhighway at the Whitechapel Gallery here in London.
It's called Electronic Superhighway. So it charts the rise of the internet and the impact of that on the art world. And there's a fascinating story in terms of, you know, starting with Nam June Paik in 1974, South Korean video artist, started stacking up TVs and making these kind of early technological works, which led to video art in a funny kind of way. So I imagine there'll be some of that. But what I'm really interested in is the kind of the net art, which is pre, you know, when the internet was still in its infancy and people started using it as a medium, the idea that this could be open source, things from anywhere, you could see it anywhere. It was a totally new thing. And it, for a while, it really shook up the art world because people didn't know how to look
it's
after it.
It's a bit of a punk aesthetic. It's kind of DIY. Yeah. It's free. It's, yeah, it's the Napster of art. In a way.
And then, of course, we being the art world, we had to monetize it and commercialize it. So you get post-internet art, which people still struggle to define. But I could say simply is, you know, work that is has that idea of open source and the internet in mind, but is now made as a result of the knowledge of what the internet has done for us. So the problem with all of these shows, I find, is that trying to put something that's based online and about the internet or about digital technologies into physical spaces is always
and having a little piece of wood on the wall with your text on and
and making an object when actually what you've done so successfully is present something online
ephemeral or something
and they're in a good situation in that it's a museum, so there's, you know, there's no commercial pressure to have things that are actually, you know, works for sale. But I always worry about how they're going to leap that bridge from the screen to the wall.
One of the artists, the first artists on my notes here is Corey Archangel, as part of that list, who is a Listen artist and makes artifacts, makes stuff, but it's very much, like, I guess, a pre- and post-internet artist, sort of thought you'd describe him as, because he does a lot of interesting stuff. He seems to me he successfully does that thing of being able to make artifacts that are about something that's entirely ephemeral and sort of doesn't exist, which is the internet.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they haven't gone for the really... They could have gone for a really sort of trendy list of names, like the kind of the uber young kids who are all doing this at the moment. And maybe that would have been even more relevant somehow. But this is a survey show, it's a museum, they've done it in sort of a fairly stately way. So it'll be interesting to see. I have high hopes for it, actually.
I wonder how they will show it, though, because I thought... I mean, like, I really enjoyed The Adventures of the Black Square, but I did feel everything was rammed in. Yeah. And I feel, just from what you've... The list you've just discussed there... Quite a few of those artists, it depends what they're showing, of course, but if they're doing some of their bigger installation pieces, they need space. So I wonder how they will cope with the fact that the Whitechapel isn't really that big.
Virtual space, screens everywhere.
Well, that would be, but that'd be very difficult for the viewers if that's what we have.
Just a little corner, it just says Google it at the end. We ran out of space. It is Electronic Superhighway. It's on the Whitechapel Gallery here in London. And that opens on the 29th of January and it finishes. It closes on the 15th of May 2016. Plenty of time to see that one. Next, we're going to a whole different kind of idea. The 500th anniversary of Hieronymus Bosch's death. This is a show, presumably, of his stuff at the Sterkenbosch.
Apparently, they generally call it Den Bosch, which makes life easier for us, because I was wondering if anyone was going to be brave and try and say that very
I think I could have got
Dutch
away
name.
With it. I think I could have got away with it if I hadn't tried to do it. So if I hadn't tried to get every single consonant and syllable in. So Den Bones, Den Bones, Den Bones, Den Bosch.
I'm going to call it Den Bosch.
So tell us about this one. I mean, ripe for revival, I suppose. This is kind of, you know, how many times have we kind of zeroed in on different parts of Bosch? Do we look at him in terms of his importance to contemporary artists, to the people that went immediately after him? What's this one dealing with, Ossian?
Well, I mean, I'm just a big fan. I don't know probably as much about the show as Jane does, let alone the fact that obviously...
Don't
Bosch,
put it on Jane.
Bosch came from...
She's not going to say the word of the name of the museum.
He came from Den Bosch.
I think it's the Noord-Brabants Museum.
Noord-Brabants Museum.
And it's interesting that they're doing it in his hometown because that's never been staged before. There are lots of works they have managed to secure loans for, which is an exceptional thing, because I mean, we all know that the Prado has the Garden of Earthly Delights, which will never move, but the show will then tour to the Prado as well, so they will kind of
then it will incorporate
as many of these works as they can. So the idea that you'll see sort of 9 of his 12 major panels in one place at any time, and obviously in the context in which they were made in Holland, in his birthplace, is fantastic.
Yes, and I think there's a big scholarly element to this exhibition. Bosch was very successful in his lifetime, and he was very, or at least I believe he was, but he was certainly very popular with kings later on. So that's why so many of these paintings have ended up in great sort of collections.
And why they've lasted, because they haven't bounced around from place to place, presumably.
Yeah, so he's got work, you know, apart from the Prado, they're bringing the Ship of Fools from the Louvre, they're bringing some of the Visions of the Hereafter from the Accademia in Venice, the stuff coming from the Met. Basically, partly it's a magnificent loan show of greatest hits, although admittedly without the Garden of Earthly Delights. But also the Getty and a number of other institutions have paid for a large research project. They're producing a whole new catalogue. They've been busy reattributing drawings, and there's a lot of scholarship around this show. And I believe that towards the end of the exhibition, there's going to be a big section on the scholarship that's been taken.
So it's a book worth buying after you see it.
I presume, yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a key book. I mean, and we don't know till we see it.
It's 500 years, but that's the best thing about him. He never dates, because everyone is still seeing things in there, and it's futuristic, and it's crazy, and it's, you know, kind of all these levels of hell and heaven and things combined. So you can never be bored by Bosch.
I mean, it is interesting how much scholarship around him sort of changes, though, isn't it? I mean, there were plenty of plenty of scholars have sort of reappraised Bosch, and there was a bit of a fashion for seeing him as a kind of LSD tripped out guy long before his time, which I'm pretty sure wasn't true, but.
I like it. You can never be bored by Bosch.
You could get bored.
Let's just say that Austin Ward said that and winked at the same time. Did you see that, Jane?
I didn't, actually.
Well, you might get bored in Den Bosch. I haven't been to Den Bosch.
I don't know. We don't know what the food's like or the nightlife. But anyway, keep it to the museum and you'll be happy. That's Hieronymus Bosch at the Noord-Brabants Museum in Den Bosch. And finally, we're going to Zurich. This is Manifesto 11, entitled What People Do for Money, Some Joint Ventures. This is a big deal, of course, Ossian. Talk us through, for our listeners as well, what Manifesto is.
So Manifesto is a biennial, and there's lots of biennials every year, as you know. There'll be Berlin, and I can't remember how many more there are every year. And some of those are really interesting. Manifesto is usually interesting for where it goes. So it goes to strange off-piste locations, San Sebastian. It went to somewhere called Genk in Belgium. It goes to somewhere where you wouldn't normally expect a big major exhibition of contemporary art, and it uses that location to draw some conclusions. So the weird thing was they picked Zurich this time, which is not off the beaten track at all.
It's called What People Do for Money, and it's in Zurich, so we can honest.
Yeah, so Christian Jankowski, the artist who took it up, and he's the first artist to curate the manifesto. It's normally done by a professional curator, let's say. But what he does so well in his practice is he uses other professions, let's say. So he's had mediums, he's worked with people who make soap operas, he's worked with heavyweight lifting champions and policemen and all kinds of walks of life. And what he discovered in Zurich is the kind of the old city map is made up of these districts of bankers, lawyers, you know, the kind of the medieval sections of the city are built on professions, you know, much like I suppose London was as well. But he decided to use the idea that everyone knows Zurich is the bank capital of the world, and then invite artists to work with these sections of society, these sections of professions, and see what comes out of them. Because
he's like a sort of very bourgeois Jeremy Deller.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be bourgeois, but he's also going to work with firemen and, right, you know, all levels of society. It's not just going to be bankers and contemporary artists. I mean, you know, we know what that will look like. But the idea is more that what comes out is somehow out of his control, out of the artist's control. So quite often Christian, when he's making his work, he sort of cedes control to these people and they take over somehow, and the work becomes a collaboration. So the collaborations will then also be shown in the places more or less where they're made, so in the police station or in the bank or, you know, in the location where the profession is based. So this is not going to be a kind of museum-heavy Zurich show. There's also a big thing in the lake in the middle of the city, which will be a video screen, which will show the workings, you know, how they got on, you know, following the artists as they go through this process. And there will be a curated show as part of it, which will show kind of historical examples of artists working with, you know, big business, or artists working with professions, working to make their work through other people who make work for a living. And in a funny kind of way, you know, it's the Warholian idea. It's like, I get up, I go to work, I make art. It shouldn't be that controversial.
It sounds amazing. And what better place to do it? Zurich showing its workings. We'll see about that. What People Do for Money, some joint ventures. It's Manifesto 11. It's on in various institutions and buildings and parts of the city around Zurich from the 11th of June to the 18th of September 2016. So there we are. That is Jane Morrison, Ossian Ward's tips for the top for 2016, at least for the beginning part of the year. Quite a lot to get our teeth into there. Fascinating stuff. Brilliantly talked through. Thank you so much indeed. Established 5 years ago, Chan Hampe is an art gallery in Singapore that champions homegrown talent. Located in the Raffles Hotel, founder Benjamin Hampe has discovered artists such as Ruben Pang, one of whose works was recently sold at Christie's first ever sale in Singapore last month. However, with rising rents downtown, Hampe has had to find a new spot for his less commercial and more experimental artists. In August, Shophouse 5 opened in Singapore's Geylang district. Monocle's Jason Lee popped by.
Our commercial space in Raffles Hotel requires us to set the price points at a certain level for financial viability. However, over the years, our success has been attributed to the support of very young artists who are just starting out and really working very closely with them and developing their careers until they're ready for more commercial platforms. So rather than forego that entirely, as we're now over 5 years down the road and the market has changed a lot for Singaporean art, my business partners decided to donate a quarter of their living space to a gallery, which we've set up like a not-for-profit art space. So we can continue to support young artists without the commercial pressure of having to pay the landlord.
You've taken it upon yourself to develop and groom young Singaporean artistic talent. What do you look out for?
I look first and foremost at quality of output. Then, what is the artist trying to say? Is there longevity in their practice? And do they have commitment to their own professional aspirations?
And what's on show now?
Currently, we have an exhibition that was curated by Khairullah Rahim, who does some teaching at the LaSalle College of the Arts. And along with his peers, Simon Ung and Hilary Schwartz, they've come together to do a three-person show that focuses on queer narratives in Singapore.
Are there trends among Singaporean artists? Are there certain things that you see recurring? Or are Singaporean artists very, very unique and different from each other?
The wonderful thing about Singaporean contemporary art is that it's very individualistic. Every artist that we work with works in a very different way, in a very different style, different mediums, with very different messages. I think that's also indicative of Singapore itself. It really is a global city. There are so many influences that come in from the region and also all over the world. It really is a nexus point for all of these different cultures, traditions, and histories too. So I think that's the most exciting and actually the strength that we have here in Singapore in its contemporary art scene.
When it comes to local art, do you find that there is a demand for it, or are most collectors more interested in Western art or artists that are more established internationally?
Singapore is a very diverse art market. I suppose for us, we've enjoyed a surge of interest in Singaporean art, especially on the ground. 6 years ago, there wasn't a gallery that was doing a Singapore contemporary art program. We were the first gallery to establish this. And, you know, being first off the rank really benefited the gallery and the business.
And what's your aspirations for 2016 for your galleries, both Shophouse 5 and Chan Hampe?
We'll be very focused on our two programs at Raffles Hotel and here at Shophouse 5 in Geylang. We do a lot of work with external parties, so We've got one project coming up during Singapore Art Week with the Leica Gallery at Raffles Hotel, with an American photographer who's long since passed away, but was the unofficial photographer for the Kennedy family and did a lot of work taking photographs for Dior and Chanel. And we've got other projects such as that kind of peppered throughout the year. So I think next year will be very much a Singapore year for us. In the past, we've kind of been focused on a lot of art fairs. We may do one or two next year. I'm not sure yet. But, you know, there's going to be a lot going on in Singapore next year, and we're an integral part of that.
Thanks, Jason. And that brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk music. But for the time being, from me, thanks for tuning in.